Welcome to the Finance and Governance Committee meeting for the City of Tukwila City Council. I'm here as the chair of the committee and I welcome Councilmember Kathy Fogarty and Councilmember Deshaun Quinn, who are members of the committee. Today's agenda starts right with a business agenda 1A, the approval to conduct a private LTE proof of concepts with the Washington State Broadband Office for student internet access. So we have our Chief Technology Officer speaking on this, Joel Bush, and if this, we're considering this to forward to the regular meeting on the 20th.
Yes. So the State Broadband Office reached out to us about conducting a proof of concept for private LTE using the Citizens Broadband Radio Spectrum earlier this year. So I've been working with a number of vendors to see what we can do for $1 million in grant funding. And that's what you have before you. But before I talk about some of the materials, like I talked about what a smart city was a number of years ago, and the first pillar is access, quality internet access for students. So we look at where we deployed hotspots. There's a map in there, and we aligned this proof of concept to those areas.
That so you're talking about this bit of yeah. separate kind of shit.
Yeah. So this is student need. It's not home internet. So essentially what happened for students who live in those areas, they'll get either a Chromebook that's LTE enabled, so they'll have internet access whenever in their one of the covered areas, or they'll get a Wi-Fi dongle that they can plug in. But what's really neat about this, it sets some foundational pieces for a smart city. We'll get the beginning of the infrastructures in place to do really neat things. Smart metering for utilities, backhauling traffic, cameras through an LTE connection. There's a lot of new things we can do. So this is serving primarily, see on the map, Allentown, Tukwila International Boulevard, and Tukwila Hill. And that's where we identified the need to be. The second page on the second, this sheet here shows it's really important because Tukwila is situated in kind of a unique environment. The Citizens Broadband Radio Service was made available by the Navy freeing up radio spectrum from their radar systems. Since we're near port and we're near two airports, it's kind of important to make sure we can actually make it work and we're good to go, which was good news. The third page here is this is not site. Visits have not happened yet. This is for a number of companies have looked at what we can do for $1 million, and this is one of the vendors, the coverage area, and some potential cell site locations. And right now there are 7. Cool. But the coverage looks okay. The ideal speed would be 100 download and 20 upload. Ideal location. So there is a time frame that's pretty aggressive. Project needs to be completed by June 30th. All the invoices need to be sent to the state by, I believe, June 20th. So it's pretty aggressive schedule. So the next, if we get approval for the mayor to sign the interlocal agreement, that's the very last piece. Then we'll move on to contracting with one of the vendors we've been working with.
Councilmember, I clicked it to your packet. There was replacement pages that were distributed Friday afternoon, and I clicked it to your free packet.
Oh yeah, I didn't.
I think
Another thing, it has one monopole near the water reservoir on Tukwila Hill. There's potentially going to be another one near the Foster Golf Course maintenance facility. Okay. But these, when it says monopole, it's not like the monstrosity monopole on a macro side. It wouldn't be like this. Like the attachments to a light pole would be similar in size to what you see for the public Wi-Fi on 144. It's not going to be a big month. So the ask is to authorize the mayor to sign the interlocal agreement next month. Any questions?
Questions, comments, Councilmember Quinn?
I don't have any questions, but just to confirm, this is a big focused investment from the state at the amount of $1 million.
Yes.
Our step is to sign a contract so we can confirm the location and the process for deliberation at the rate of $94,000.
No. So it is the ask right now is to sign the inter-agency agreement with the state broadband office of the Department of Commerce,
mm-hmm.
and then we move forward. That's showing our commitment to the project.
Yeah. Okay. Don't want to
question.
Well, those were my questions, so thank you.
But I'm going to go ahead and further refine the conversation. We're going to spend $1 million with a vendor we haven't selected yet.
I've been working very, yes.
We're going to pick one and sign an interlocal agreement.
No, this interlocal.
The state of Washington.
To say we're moving forward.
Say we're going to spend your money.
Yeah.
And we're going to hurry up and pick one of these three.
Yeah, I've got three I've been working on.
And I know you, it's possible.
Yeah.
They're going to have all the infrastructure in place before the 30th of June, and you're going to be able to invoice it?
Yes, I had a conversation with one of the vendors this morning, just re-emphasizing the timelines, and one of the vendors mentioned he did a project similar in 30 days.
Okay.
They have a warehouse for a lot of the materials. We won't get in a bind where they can't get a radio because they're back ordered for 6 months.
No supply chain issues.
Yes.
And then we'll be paying $94,000.
No, we will not be paying anything. So that $1 million covers 3 years of maintenance fees and managing the spectrum on our behalf.
Okay.
After 3 years, we need to budget. Is this something we want to continue doing?
That was the question.
Yeah.
And if we couldn't budget it, we would mothball it?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, we go ahead and at 94 or whatever the provider says their new rates are, we move forward.
Yeah. So I'll put it in perspective of some of the spends just on iPads. Do we have a number of LTE-enabled iPads? I mentioned it before, we spent almost $60,000 on those a year. So that's just to put the cost in perspective. And so say if we wanted to move forward with this, can those iPads or iPads, like maybe if they're just going to be at CCC or the golf course, maybe you just use that LTE connection for if this is establishing.
And the world I'm in, 20 years for downloads, not good. Or does it upload at 20?
No, it's 100 download.
100 download. And then 20 upload is a little slow.
So this is a little different because it's a home internet shared by multiple people. So this is one internet connection per device. So that device that's not shared will have 100 megabyte download and 20 upload.
And I realize students aren't shoving data back and forth like I might be in that.
But it's by device. So if you have 5 kids in one household, they'll get, if you add up, they're getting combined 500 megabytes download.
Got it. Any other questions, comments? Anybody have a problem with sending this forward to the next world? Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you. Moving to 1B. It's the monthly general fund update for January 2023. Tony's catching up, our deputy finance director. Discussion on.
Thank you. Okay. So this report is Tony Colton, Deputy Finance Director. This report, I'm going to just go over this. Okay. So the reports for the general fund expenditure report for the month of January. As to be expected, not a lot to report in the first month as far as being over budget. So as of the end of January, all general fund departments are within their allocated budget. So when I look at budget to actual percent expended, At the end of January, that's 8.3% of the year. The departments came in collectively at 7.5%, so they're under. If we add in the non-departmental, 6.8%, so percent to the year, they're under 1 month of the year. A few departments reported expenditures higher than the 8.3%. So I did look into that. Finance has a maintenance agreement with Tyler Technology that brought them higher. Police has some increase in salaries as well as professional services with dispatch services. And Public Works had a higher insurance premium. These are items that were anticipated, budgeted for, which is why they're under the allocated budget. Part of the reason why we do allocate a budget is to address these sorts of things where you may have a 12-month insurance payment that you pay at the beginning of the year that makes you look higher, but it normalizes as the year goes on. So again, within allocated budget, I also look at the percent change 2022-2023. And just to start at the end of work backwards, we're 3.5% under what we spent last year at the same time, $190,000. So a couple departments, I highlighted a few things on here to bring to your attention just so we could have something to look at other than everything is fine. But we look into that stuff and admin services, reason why they're higher this month than last year is online services by TIS is higher. Recreation has extra labor that they're hiring back. And then the police and public works that are highlighted here, I think we address those higher insurance premiums and then the police professional services. When I look at the classification by table, three pages in, what I've done in the past here is identified changes from the prior year that are 5% higher than last year and $50,000, something that's material there to look at. And there's only one that qualified for that at the end of January, and that was professional services. And again, those are things that we looked at before. It's police dispatch, liability insurance, and then fire contributed to the professional services. And that's with their contract services. Previously, those were reported as salaries and benefits last year. So that's what that is. And so in every category, we are under at the end of January. So we're under our allocated budget, under where we should be with 1 month into the year and under what we spent at the same time last year. So I'll stop with that.
That was one of our questions and comments. I don't think anybody had questions. I have one tiny question. This was a really big one. Communications, we just haven't spent any money. That's a big percent sitting there right underneath their professional.
Oh, look at that, 7,000.
Yeah.
That sure is a lot. So the reason why I don't drill into that is because it's only $14,000, $15,000. Yeah. And so I want to define a criteria that is material. So I go with the 5% and $50,000. Since it was only $14,000, I thought.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
So I'm just supposed to. It's an eye-catching thing to look at, but I get your thinking. All right. Anything further, guys? Thank you for the report. We are now on 1C, an update on the boards and commissions appointments process. This is from the Little Humphrey, the legislative analyst, and Cheryl Thompson, our executive assistant and discussion owner. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This memo is an attempt to respond to your discussion that you had on January 9th. It was a collaborative attempt to respond to the topics that we heard you wanted to talk further about. If we missed anything, do let us know and we can come back with more information. Not going to read the memo to you, but there's a lot of information here about the purpose of boards and commissions and all of the different sources of information about boards and commissions. Recruitment. We definitely expanded recruitment efforts over the last few years, and this is a list of everything that we're currently doing. Equity and Social Justice Commission took a look in 2019 and also provided some input on that. There are a lot more details on the administrative policy that's attached. And so in 2019, the then Community Development and Neighborhoods Committee took an in-depth look at the process and made several recommendations. Those were taken and turned into that new administrative policy that was created to establish and provide consistent procedures for the review and selection of community members to serve. Next page talks about qualifications, requirements, and representations. All members sign a conflict of interest disclosure form and Ethics, Open Public Meetings Act, Public Records Act, and Equity Policy Training Certification within 90 days of the appointment or reappointment. This year, a new central repository has been created so that the mayor's office can quickly verify that all of those have been complete. There was discussion on the dais about term limits. There are currently no term limits for our boards and commissions. That's usually the case for cities, and we don't currently recommend changing that based on the size of our residential community and the difficulty in finding volunteers. Next topic was social security number. Councilmember Crawler was concerned about that. This is a requirement of our third-party vendor that's used for all of the volunteers, including those working with kids at the community center and such. Social security numbers are redacted from council meeting packets and are not disclosable. I personally made a mistake last month when I forwarded a packet of material to you from the applicants. They were not redacted, but if anybody had requested emails from that day, they would be redacted in the public disclosure. And I won't. That will be addressed going forward. Next section is a detailed look at the mayor's current selection process. And then the administrative policy is attached. So if you have questions about the process, we have our subject matter expert here, Cheryl, to execute the process. And with that, I'll turn it over to you for questions.
If you're comfortable with it, I'd like you to walk through the mayor's selection process because that's your most attention in our discussion. Is that okay?
That's fine. So when an application is received, it comes in, we go through the background check process. And then when that comes back cleared, the application is sent to the mayor and over to the staff liaison. The mayor will provide input. He'll look at it. He'll provide input on whether he's going to reach out directly to the applicant or asking staff to do that, to provide background, answer questions with regard to the board or commission and what their work looks like when they meet, those kinds of basic things. He asks staff for a recommendation on the fit. And then when they come back with that, then he'll make a determination. And that's with, I'm talking about the process for new appointments for vacant positions. And then he will give me instruction to get it an appointment scheduled, and then I will do the memo, provide it to council members. I provide it to you, then there's a week time frame, and then it's the applicant's notified of the recommended appointment, and that's all done 3 weeks before it's actually scheduled to go before council. So that's for, like I said, vacant positions, new appointments. For the reappointment application process, we did create as part of the new process a reappointment application. So in mid-September, the reappointment applications are mailed out to all of the incumbents that have terms ending that year, and they are asked to return the reappointment application by October 15th. So it gives them about a month to respond. At that same time, I've prepared an ad that goes out in the Hazelnut in October that advertises all of the positions that terms are ending in December of that year. So both of those things are kind of happening simultaneously. After October 15th, I will notify staff liaisons of all of the incumbents that have submitted reappointment applications and request feedback from them with regard to a reappointment recommendation. They are offered time to meet with the mayor if they want to do it, or they can provide the recommendation in writing. I ask them to provide that information by November 15th. At the same time, that ad that's out there is asking for anybody that's interested in applying to serve, submit an application by November 15th. So after November 15th, I take any new applications, all the reappointment applications, and the list of the positions, and that is given to the mayor, and he reviews those and then gives back to me what actions he would like to go forward.
Okay. Questions, comments, Councilmember Quinn?
Yeah, actually, so a couple of things. This is a great kind of overview. We had a process looking at the appointments for boards. The thing I like here is a consideration of kind of attendance, objectivity, and effectiveness. And then when it comes to the mayor's selection process, which we're on, I'm always looking for kind of what opportunities exist, right? There was a time where we had challenges with folks applying, expressing interest. And I think there's an opportunity for consideration, whether it be demographic, you know, location, experience. And so I think this speaks to the reappointment process, doesn't necessarily speak to, but you're going to answer. So.
Well, I could, where I'm seeing that you're going is it doesn't speak to what his mindset is with regard to the reappointment process and looking at those things. I am the presenter of the information to
yep.
him.
Yep.
He did review the memo, and so the information provided under mayor's selection process is what he weighed in to provide. I can't speak beyond that.
Sure. And I think, you know, this is an opportunity to kind of talk about the process. And we did have a conversation, you know, just for the record, I'm not in favor of term limits. And every year, I think, I don't care what commission you're on, there's considerations on the ground of things shifting and changing. And so looking at, one, the opportunity that is provided for folks who have an interest, who potentially have experience or may be in a certain part of the city that, you know, they've observed some things and bring some new things to the table. And so, you know, my question still remains around weighing other considerations over reappointment and appointment process. I think what we heard in the meeting is, Aline, if you want to be reappointed, you'll be reappointed. And so for those general folks filling out an application saying there's an opening, that's just, it's clear that the person's going to get reappointed and that space is not going to be available. So I would kind of be interested into what are some updated trade-offs that we would consider, and then how are we aligning that with the strategic plan? How are we aligning? I know the Equity Commission gave initial feedback, and I think it was kind of early. And I think as you go on, when it talks about equity is also creating opportunities for new ideas and new opportunities, because that's how you actually grow your knowledge of the city. So for me, I guess my comments are kind of in this realm of really the balancing act that comes with it. I mean, again, he's a mayor, he can do what he wants. As a council member, I really hope that we're encouraging criteria around folks that is inclusive and potentially creates a space, because it's already a daunting process if you're a general resident, say you've never interacted with the city, but you could actually have a professional background that fills a gap that the city needs. So those are my comments, and I'd love to keep talking about it, because I think there have been historically things that have been done that aren't like attached to an individual. It's more attached to the process. And what we've learned around creating opportunities, we've got more detail. You know, we've worked for gender balance, you know, kind of lived experience balance, all the above. And so those are the things that, you know, in circa 2023, I don't care who you are, if you have a process, you should be looking at your process and considering some things, especially if we are articulating things in our strategic plan or we make a commitment around equity and social justice. Let's make sure that we're not actually upholding barriers that have existed, right? That's the case I can consider. If at a point in time, actually in this area, and even if you read the covenants that are still in the books on the University of Washington, you can live here. So these are the considerations. How are we updating these processes to create actually a greater sense of inclusiveness, but also belonging?
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Hubbard.
Yeah, so I want to tag team onto some of the things that you said. I'm going to do that first before they fall on my head. So you said you want to keep talking about it. I was like, so what does that mean? And then you said something that I think is really important, and that is to make sure we're not upholding barriers. And I was wondering if maybe that was the gist of what you meant about keep talking about it, because I was like, so talking about for outcome. I think that's a really good way to describe it, is make sure that we're not creating and or upholding barriers for people. And so what does that mean? And that would be for not only new people, but reapplicants. So I wrote that down as something that was there. So let's go back to the application going through equity and social justice in 2019. I think I was a little rusty on the whole, what we actually was in our process. And so it looks like we did have things that were addressed, like we do have a disclosure form for conflict of interest. So that does exist. So all the current members have signed a conflict of interest. So if there is a perceived conflict of interest, if we want to have some way to say, well, we still think there's a conflict of interest, then we need to talk. Or we just leave it as is and say, we've got it in there. If we find a conflict of interest, then I think all that needs to service between appointments and not during the appointment process. Disclosure form ethics and all those things are all there. And I agree about term limits. That's just a little messy. I think that we can address that by the other things we've been just talking about, instead of just saying two terms. That might be arbitrary and you might lose some good people. It might be better to say, make sure we're not upholding any barriers and any status as some sort of something to look at rather than two term limits. Or I'm just using that. It could be five, you know, for all that. Because as you notice, all the terms are different lengths, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on the nature of what it is, they're all different lengths. So thank you for the information about the social security numbers. I think that was all really good for us to hear and know and be assured that still is kept confidential, and good question too. So I want to go back to new appointees and also reappointees, and talking about how to make sure that we are not upholding any barriers or creating any barriers, or how far do we want to create policy and process to guide the mayor in his selection? So that really could be another part of the ongoing processes.
If I interrupt, because it was going to be my question, I should have put that in the beginning. Is this completely the mayor's process, or does the council have any say in how this works, or policy-wise?
I'm sorry. Absolutely. So it's an administrative policy. You can see the template on page 17, and it's not a council-adopted policy, because this is an internal
process. I have to remember that.
In 2018, the committee, Council Member Quinn was the chair, discussed it in depth over the course of several meetings and came up with some really great suggestions that were incorporated.
So that's what we're doing. You suggest.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And I spaced out on that. I looked at it this afternoon and went, and then probably forgot again. So thanks. So, but I do think that the mayor's office does take seriously what council says. So
So it's some suggestions I have is in equity ESJ reforms itself all the time, run it through them again. If those are things that we could suggest, run it through them again. Maybe they'll have some good ideas. And actually, that's about the only suggestion I have right mm-hmm. now is that one. But I do think that these are really good points. I don't know, you can talk about, you know, you're the chair, where we go from here, but demographic location, what does that mean, and on which commissions is it more important than others? For like the planning commission, do you want to go into historical amounts of people in that particular area, or is it just what the need is right now, or is that getting too complicated? But those are questions. And also, so I wrote down including criteria that is inclusive. That's again where I'm thinking equity and social justice, you know, that's sort of what they do. So what would be criteria that would make it inclusive? So those are some things that we could work on. I'm hearing two council members anyway say they're not interested in term limits, but to be able to shape this process in other different, in other ways to make it better.
The strategic plan is something that we hold up as representing the city as well. So, you know, I would be looking for that in here. Again, knowing the role, I'm not questioning the role, but we are asked to confirm. So what are some of my considerations as we confirm? And it is, you know, hearing, you know, maybe the criteria worth consideration. And so that's a big one, because we're asked to do that, and we're also told not to say that it's, well, people might say that there's, you know, folks are rubber stamping, but I never rubber stamp, which is why it matters what the criteria is and how it's been met. And any lack of that information, I'm going to have a question.
Well, I like that. I really like that, because we do have to confirm, and instead of getting to the point where we're like, well, what about this or that, if we have this conversation, and then the mayor's office is like, okay, this is what they're looking for. I think, again, this is the mayor's office decision, but I do think that they take that very seriously. This is the kind of thing when we are confirming the appointment that we're looking for. So I think that gives validation to that, you know, and you can, for whatever that's worth. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, my line of thinking and the questions that I have, I keep in mind one thing: what is the least likely person to get on board and commission facing here in our city if they wanted to apply? When I look at our process, and on the whole, the process is pretty good. I think you write well, so there's nothing like that. That's a big deal. It'll be smattered all over because that's the way I write my notes, but the social security number itself might be a barrier for someone even trying to apply. And there's two things that need to happen. One, it's like, how badly do we need to do a background check on a perks thing? And maybe I'm wrong because there's lots of children involved. Okay. I just picked one out of the air. Maybe there's other ones where there aren't lots of children involved, and name that committee.
Library.
When I started, mm-hmm. we were not doing background checks.
Yeah.
And then there was concern expressed about that. And for those reasons that you mentioned, working with children, that kind of thing. And so it's the same background check that would be conducted for volunteers, for our volunteer program. And so that's what the pattern that we followed. Now, COPCAB actually has a more extensive background check conducted by the police department, but that is the only one that goes through the more extensive. So I
arts commission.
Right.
I'm thinking, well, not on the commission itself, right?
No. Well, we do have student representatives on several of the commissions.
So there are some people who are viable, active people who live here that have jobs and do a lot of things and may not be comfortable providing certain documentation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about the least of these, they're in that bunch. One that's just as valuable in terms of their input or their volunteerism, et cetera, and involve them on a lot of levels. So rather than coming up with a solution, I'm just going to suggest we look into how is it that we include them if they want to be involved. Because that's how you cultivate community and involvement. And by drawing lines and saying, well, there's some higher governmental process. You're here or not here for reasons that are okay or not. We're not even going to consider you. And that can present a problem. Wondering if the background checkers have come up with a process. Don't know. When I apply for jobs, and I do apply for jobs that end up having background checks that go deeper, yes. I've never been asked for my social security number up front as part of the process, like ever. I've always gotten into at least a certain round of the interviews, or they've asked for the background check information once I've like made the grade, and now we're interested in you pending, and then all that stuff chain reacts after that, and they let you know up front that the process is going to involve that. And I'm wondering if that would be the appropriate thing. All right. And when they do it, it's a separate piece of paper that goes only to the vendor. It doesn't stay in the HR files, but when you're applying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And to be honest, I've had some questions about that myself. We did check with our current vendor, and it is the requirement. So, sure. What are the thoughts? I mean, do you look at others and see if there's others that do it differently? Do you do the background check later in the process? I think that one of the reasons that we haven't done that is we're not investing time in somebody that may not pass that. How many times has that happened in the 11 years that I've lived here? Once.
Okay. Right. Okay. So these are all suggestions, at least the ones that are coming from me, because this is the marriage process, as far as I know, and we don't actually have a say over it. I think it's good that the administration's response is to be here today and talking about the process. And hopefully, even though on what appears to be the final year of being mayor, he's open-minded to process adoption. So that's one area that just seems like it could be not on the main sheet with everything else. It could be on the sheet for the vendor who requires it, because we probably don't require it. And I would do at least that separate path of the paperwork. And when you have them fill them out, the later the better, in my opinion. But, it's whatever you want to do. And when I listened to your windows, it wasn't very long. And maybe we let all applications get to the round where they have the background checks. I don't know. I am also not interested in term limits, but others may think that churn is important on some of these things. And if they do, I'm just putting the suggestion forward. Sound Cities Association has term limits, I think, on everything, all their committees and boards and commissions. And I'm sitting next to a council member who went through that process, I believe, on the transit a committee, commission, whatever it is. And you outlived your term, and they opened it up to everybody, and I think nobody applied, and then they reoffered it to you. I may be not perfectly accurate on your situation, but with that, I mean, you were qualified, willing, and available, and that's awesome. I think that might be a smart move on some of these folks that if people or a mayor or someone says, yeah, term limits might be the right way to go, that might be the workaround, or we can't find people, it's hard to recruit. Just putting it for something to be aware of. Other organizations run into the same problem, and that's how they get around it. And it encourages churn, which is usually healthy for organizations. If I apply, is mayors are going to change. So if I apply 4 years ago, and you haven't heard from me since, so I didn't get picked, do applications age out?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we notify people that if they have not been selected, we keep their application on file for a year. They are considered for any positions that come available during that time frame. And so even if it's one that they didn't initially select, well, we can reach out and say, hey, we've had a vacancy here. Not sure if that's something that interests you or not. And so we keep them on file for a year, and that meets legal retention guidelines. Okay. And then they would need to reapply.
Okay.
And part of that is an expiration of background check documents.
Okay. That makes all sense to me. I just wanted to know. We just don't hang on for people for 6 years without their knowledge and then
right.
consider them or go back. And because to me, I'm trying to figure out what's equitable to the people who are applying, if there's an open. And someone who has applied in the past, but they haven't stuck with it, but I'm still interested. It just seems unfair
right.
to reach back and go, okay. What I didn't understand, I thought that there was a conflict of interest process. I was assured when I walked out of the meeting that they felt strongly that there was a paper and you'd go double check and so it's really about confirming it. But more important to me is what happens. What is the process when people think there's a violation of a conflict of interest?
Well, they would need to, I believe that's addressed in the bylaws. I don't have the bylaws okay. in front of me. And each board and commission has a different set of bylaws. We adopted, put together the city attorney's office in coordination with MRSC, put together a template of bylaws.
Okay.
I want to say that was back in 2017 when we updated our code. And so it was given to all of the staff liaisons to go over with the boards and commissions, make them fit for each one, but keep the consistency in them. So I will look at that with regard to the conflict of interest, but I believe that it's that they would notify the chair would notify the staff, and then we would get the city attorney.
Okay. And then, Laurel.
I was just yeah. going to add that, Teams chat, that the commissioners are subject to Municipal Code 2.95, Code of Ethics for Employees and Appointed Officials, and there's a complaint process outlined in there.
Okay. All right. So any citizen could put out their concern to who?
It may be filed with one of the following officers, mayor or city attorney.
Okay. That's good enough for me. It's on the record, and someone can look at it if they want. All right, it covers almost everything except I know the mayor's concerned about, I am concerned and other people are concerned about making sure our processes are clear to people. And I use the phrase fair, equitable, and defensible. I used to work for attorneys. We used to say that a lot, and it works out to be lifelong. That's a very good qualifier. I think the mayor tries pretty hard to consider equity and justifiable processes. I hear him say a word, it's equity gate or something like that. But does he in fact have a declared set of criteria that he goes through to evaluate evenly all applicants?
I can't speak to his thought process with regard to things. I know that, in conversations that we've had, that he's looking at neighborhoods, he's looking at age, he's looking at all different sorts of demographics when he's looking at different things. And I do know that up at the dais, he did say that if somebody applies for reappointment, their reappointment. I do want to actually correct that there have been a couple instances where that actually has not been the case, where we've had somebody that submitted a reappointment application, and we had somebody else submit an application, and we actually went with the new applicant. So, I mean, over almost 8 years, he didn't recall that, but that has been the case.
And that would be my only suggestion, is maybe come up with some measurable criteria to share with applicants so they have a greater security of what is being considered. Because if you told me that I was the least, or people would think of least, and end up on a commission or committee, I would be concerned that that was not fair to me, and I may not even try. So I'll, with that, is there any other comments, questions anyone has based on this?
Well, just something that Kathy said as well, right? This concept of with an outcome in mind. And the process can be a great equalizer and also an insulator when you're considering certain things. So, you know, with the outcome in mind, you talk about boards and commissions.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you said that he misspoke. And outside of that, we had no window into the consideration was. And then in that, there was not enough time to wait to see or hear the balance of that consideration. Well, we did more participation and maybe, you know, versus an institutional knowledge versus someone who's got fresh eyes and has lived in different locations and maybe have experienced different things that has worked. But I think it's really good, and I think it's really kind of highlighted not only with both with what we said, especially the least component, right? Mm-hmm. And that might be the difference in somebody's life, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking about it as someone who has to approve this, but with the outcomes in mind. And think about the comp plan, I think about the strategic plans. Those are also outcome based. Those are considerations. That's all I
think.
So, we're talking about considering factors like attendance regularity, objectivity, effectiveness. It could be neighborhood, it could be institutional knowledge versus like knowledge that they have from the particular job that they have. I do think now that I'm thinking back, maybe we did have a commission where somebody was not reappointed because of their attendance. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I'm remembering that now. And it would be good if maybe people were reminded that if they don't come, that's really an easy one, right? If you're not showing up. And I do think to recall that one time. Somebody simply wasn't there. And so it's like, you know, you got to be there.
Yeah.
And that was the move.
That sounds like they're kind of on that.
It's pretty straightforward. And we do have, I mean, we've used it a couple times, but we do have a letter that will go out if we've been notified that somebody's not been attending regularly.
Mm-hmm.
We do send out a letter just with a reminder. And then it gives also an out. If you're no longer interested, please let us know, and then we can get that.
Yeah, that's good.
We've done it a couple times, but that letter does exist for use.
Yeah.
Good thing to know that you've got that.
Cheryl, I don't see you very often because I don't come in enough, I guess. Glad to see you here. Thank you for coming in today. Thank you, Laurel, for the part that you had in pulling together the information and having good answers on this. Unless there's more on this item, we're going to move forward.
I would be interested, I think, as you said, is having the Equity Commission take another look at it as it continues to evolve. And so I don't have a set timeline, but I just think that that's the one where you constantly look at your process. We do that for everything else. We do. We actually look at our processes, and so it'd be great to have the Equity Commission look at it as well.
So,
go ahead.
So I'm on the Equity commission. And I think it's a good idea. The way to do that would be to frame it as to why it's coming to us, to say that we want to review this periodically,
mm-hmm.
and then give them a good background so they know why and what they're looking for and why. And then sometimes some really good ideas, I mean, often good ideas will come out, but sometimes they're really like salient good features that we can really grab onto that we haven't thought of before. So it would be framed in a way, given that background, so they know what we're looking for, and what we're looking for is what we talked to you about today is, you know, are there barriers that have been there that we don't, that we're just not seeing? And do you have suggestions for how to remove those barriers or something, and something else, if there's something else?
One last question. We know it to be the mayor's privilege to do this work. Is that the same in every city across the state? Okay, so it's a RCW. Okay. And does it limit how many commissions and boards it can have under that RCW?
My understanding, and Ms. Thompson can correct me if I'm wrong or Mr. Fine, but my understanding is there are certain commissions required by RCW, such as planning commission, but cities have flexibility in adding, city councils and mayors have flexibility in adding advisory committees and whatever topics they want input on.
We've already done advisory committees, and et cetera, but if we wanted to set up a committee or a commission as a council, would we have the right to create one?
I believe so. Our commissions are codified. So it would require an ordinance.
And then the management and operations of it would still rest with the mayor under RCW.
Some things are in the code that the council says.
Okay. There's a little movement there, not necessarily an existing one. Okay, thank you very much. We're moving to item 1D. It's going to be headed up by Brandon Miles, who's online, the business relations manager, and it's an update on the capital facilities financing. The steps that they're on their way. It's another discussion only, and I see a David Klein is stepping up as well.
Yeah, so I was going to do the introduction for Mr. Miles. He's joining us. Actually, I was just going to channel Councilmember Quinn. You were talking about that we should be aligned to our strategic plan. So during your conversation, I brought up our strategic plan. And, you know, it has five goals. We updated it in 2018 with our equity goal 4. Very first one there is use Tukwila's vision, mission, and strategic plan to focus and prioritize city efforts. You gave us, you know, us in the community, that clear direction. That's A. And under D is ensure city facilities are safe, efficient, and inviting to the public. And I think the safe and efficient is one that we are focused on. And the final one is ensure the long-term fiscal sustainability of the city. And I think some of the recent actions of the council, I was just on the Annexation Oversight Committee with Councilmember Preller, and I think that financial sustainability has been on many of your minds. And so tonight is really a beginning of is continuing the conversation. It really is. We had a good beginning conversation at the last Finance and Governance Committee, and we heard lots of conversation around this committee. And so we took that and we put it into seven sections in here. And so this conversation is really, did we get it right? What are we missing? What can we add to this? What do you need to move the conversation forward? There are seven sections here. A lot of this is in draft because we wanted to make sure that we got it right. And this is the interactive portion of us creating this together, co-creating this process of how do we look at our facilities? How do we fund facilities? What's the history of our facilities?
Quick question.
Yeah.
The three goals that you just introduced us with, not in this memo?
Well, this is the interactive part of it. I think that we could add those things every night.
I had to read them off, and I'm going, I don't remember reading that.
No, that's right. Okay. I would put that, maybe that should be the preamble.
Okay.
I was just quoting it from our strategic plan, which is in the first page of our budget document. And
sure, just,
and so,
I was making sure I wasn't
yeah. supposed to have no, no, I just wanted to... Councilmember Quinn reminded me of why we do this work is because, you know, we have clear direction on doing this work together. And so that might be some of the things that I would add to this is based on our strategic plan, adopted strategic plan is that we want safe and efficient facilities and financial, you know, ensure long-term fiscal sustainability of the city. And I think that's what we're all here together for. So what we are planning on doing, we still have about 15 minutes before you have your next meeting. So I want to be respectful of your time, is that we are going to go section by section, first of all, to make sure we get it right. I do have an additional piece in one of the sections. We just gave you a table. We've expanded that table, really about the city facilities. We'll hear different things, and so we've created more columns and rows, and I'll hand that out during this meeting. We'll put that in the next packet. But I was hoping that Mr. Miles could walk you through section by section, and really looking for your input, stop us along the way. You'll see the future sections are a lot of to be determined, a lot of information that we're planning to come back to you at the next finance and governance. And this memo will be created as we go together. And with that, I'll hand it off to Mr. Miles.
Sir, quick question. Has the memo changed in first introductory page? Down to where it says financing public safety plan? Changed at all?
I'm not sure if it, Mr. Miles, if on page, I'm looking at page 21, you're saying 21 through about 24 was in our previous memo, I think.
There were some typos or just kind of some clarity, but substantively it's still the same language. And then the new information really begins on page 25 of your packet, is where we start laying out.
Permission of the committee members, is it okay if we go to the new section and not review the old one?
Yeah.
We get to save time. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully you can hear me all right. I'm in a public place right now. So starting on page 25 is the Public Works Operations Campus Phase 2 financing. And so what you see here is, you know, hearing some of the feedback that we heard from the committee, the last two finance meetings, you know, we're talking about the next D20 model, which would be a Public Works Campus financial model. And so what we've done here is we've laid out, the transportation and infrastructure saw these numbers last week. But what we've done is we're showing the construction estimates for the Public Works Phase 2, the estimated. So you'll see there, there's estimated project cost, soft cost, the construction cost, and then today's value of $76 million. And then we include our escalator, and then the adjusted totals, that's at $83 million that you saw in your packet. In the transportation packet last week. It will be going to the whole council on Monday night for them to get the same presentation that the transportation committee got. Down below, we're showing what was in the existing, existing capital facilities model, the CIP, showing how we would pay for that. And then showing additional ideas or options about how we could fund that additional revenues, which could be, you know, utility funds, bond supported, councilmatic bonds, and fund balance. One of the things that we're looking at too is how the utilities roles play into this. We've always talked about a 50-50 split, but how does that actually work is something that we want to put a lot of thought into, which is, you know, it's a site that the general fund owns. And how does do the utilities pay a rent, or how do they pay for their share of being on that property? That is, you know, if Water District 125 has to buy, rent or pay for a facility, it's the same kind of thing that we would ask our utilities to do as well, with a split between the general fund, and the utilities. So moving ahead,
take a break here. This is section 2. This is the financing, what is currently in the construction estimates. Those are updated because we actually have a real architect to give you a real site plan. The source of the funds is what is in your adopted budget. And then that last section was looking at the current gap and some of the different ideas that we were going to be bringing back to this committee. But is there anything else that you would like to add to this section on the financing?
This is specific to Public Works Phase 2.
Yes, it is.
I have a question. The 21,750, is that both numbers or one number? So under the 2025-2026 CIC.
Yeah, so the 21,750 is one is from utilities and one 2170. So total we have 43. Yeah.
So in order to, I guess, cover the cost. Okay, I wanted to make sure it wasn't there.
Yeah, so the total,
or there.
Yeah, so if you go to the top of page 26, I just want to be very clear, is that you currently have budgeted, you know, in the 23-24 budget, almost $6 million for planning and design. Plus, you've already adopted about $54 million for construction. And so right now, with the numbers that we currently have, best numbers that we have right now, there's a gap of about $23 million over the life of this project. And that's why the possible additional sources of revenue. So that's what we're trying to focus the attention on.
Thank you.
And just so you guys know, they're talking that in transportation infrastructure committee, they brought forward the options. They're telling us which ones pass criteria based on score and which one is coming emerging. And based on that, they're coming up with this order of magnitude cost estimate.
Okay. And so let's continue down on page 26. Is that there were some, this is the, from the table was now some categories about some of the different things that we are thinking about. Bond capacity, we are on. Construction delay costs, I think that this came up during the public safety bond, is that, you know, inflation is still a concern of ours as delay costs money. This was our best estimate right now. And then there did come up a question about phasing of projects. And you did that during the D20 model. You've done that in other projects. And I think that's a good idea for us to be thinking about as we move forward on these things. And so that's some of the project ideas here. Anything to add to that section?
How long will it take? So if we just green-landed everything, how long will it take to build the building and cut the ribbon?
In the Public Works meeting last week, and you can get this the whole meeting, if I remember correctly, we had about an 18-month build, and so it would be at the end of 2026. And so the lease is up on May 1st of 2025. And so if we could start construction then, the belief is 18 months built, and it would be done by December of 2026.
Construction will start when?
May 1st of 2025 is our best. That's when we actually, the lease becomes available.
Okay.
Question.
Yes.
More consideration. And I know some of this falls out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that right off the bat.
That's why we're here for.
And I think there's a measure of our capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we front load this, then how much capacity are we now taking off the table?
Mm-hmm.
As we see needs, and we know, right, that needs get generated, whether it's a significant emergency, whether it's a failure of the levy, or so it is. Getting a sense of the capacity that we have, and I understand the bond capacity, but the capacity, a city of our size, what we've taken on in the past, how much capacity are we kind of taking away? Because a part of our job is also to think about the councils that come after us. And that's, I mean, we all learned that when we would hear a great history about the sales tax coming in droves and seeing it extended, but just some kind of pros and cons around capacity, trade-offs, and or, you know, we're locked in now, our bonding capacity, but something that goes beyond that is like, how are we preparing, thinking ahead of considerations and responsibilities that we may have?
And to add to that, I think that sometimes you've done that a little bit when we did our strategic plan was a percentage of capacity based on our capital projects versus our, you know, our typical funding capacity. I think you've already given us direction on the financial sustainability, which is going to be one of those things of what is your capacity for all the things, putting that all together. And the bond capacity is one. But I think that's exactly what I would add that. I think that's a great thing to add.
Yeah, and I think an example of it would be the work we did on Chili's.
Yeah.
We knew we were 1960, you know, construction, and then it's moved past its useful life. How much more do we have that of that related to infrastructure that could break and that we need to fix it? All right, I'm done.
Good.
I have a quick question. So I just did some funky math, and so I think it's 2 years from now, to May 1 of 2025. Then you got 18 months on top of that, and you multiply that by $300,000 per month to come up with $7.2 million more than, I'm assuming, your $83 million estimate of today, unless you can tell me where that estimate of $7.2 million is in here.
So if you go back to page, actually, on making sure I got the right, page 25, mm-hmm. you'll see that we have an escalator factor
yeah.
at the very top, January 2026 escalation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've added $7.6 million
oh,
in today's dollars to okay. say, and what the best practice that we have used is actually you use a midline in construction, not the first day of construction, not the end of construction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've taken this January 2026 as an escalator factor, and you'll see in the public works presentation that will be given to the whole council next week, is we've added 7%, and then 4.5%, and then 4.5%.
But
I get to the 7.6.
Well, I see 7,678.
And up in the top left-hand corner is in millions. This is all millions.
Okay, so then if I look at the 80, I see.
And okay. so that 300,000 is that if it gets delayed past May, then your escalator would be in February or March or whatever month would be okay. the escalator.
You might want to drop the millions parentheses over by the construction estimates, because every over the column that has all the titles
yeah.
as opposed to where the money's at.
Yeah.
Good. We're doing asterisks like many people do and put it at the bottom, so it's easy to refer to.
Good.
Okay. So you're saying $76 million with this escalator.
And 7.6 million.
Yeah, and I'm doing 7.2 on my funky math here, just under 300,000 per month.
Yeah, so that's probably, I mean, that seems
that's
like...
That's just if the project's delayed.
This was...
Your escalator taking care of other rising costs that aren't...
So, David, can I interject?
Please,
so the I just want to... The when we get... So, the our cost estimator actually gets more detailed in the cost estimate. So, in some areas, they're saying, you know, this type of good, we're seeing a 10% return. Or this one we're seeing a 2%. And then when you see the 7, the 4.5, and the 4.5, we're just trying to give you a big bucket to show you what that estimate is. But there is a more detailed cost estimate that our architect and our and SRJ have done that goes through the various line items to add a cost escalator that's specific for that type of construct or that type of that expense. So that's why it's not going to always be an apples to apples comparison. And like David said, that's also going to the midpoint. And so, you know, if we get done earlier or if we get done later, it would affect the final construction cost. And that's yeah. So I hope that it kind of explained it.
Well, the reason I'm asking all that is because I just put it against the real schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about delays. So then it keeps going up if there are delays.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just trying to figure out if your $7.6 million is taking care of other escalator issues.
So the $7.6 escalator is the current schedule of completed project in December of 2026.
Okay.
It's just looking at today's dollar. No, it's looking at today's dollars and escalating it to when we actually go out to bid, which would be in December of 2024.
Right.
Because then, you know, if the council moves forward, they would put that bid in early the first quarter of 2025. And so that $83 million includes the escalation when you get to that decision point in 2024.
When you talk about escalation, it's just slightly less than a decade. Are you talking about time value of money? Or are you literally saying it costs more to purchase things based on what we've seen in terms of inflation?
This is inflation.
Okay.
That's all it is.
Okay. Thanks.
For looking at your clock here, I want to, so this, we started this chart of list of city facilities and we realized we were missing a lot of headings.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to hand this out. This is a work in progress. It's just to, sure, one gets one here. And so we're looking for you to give your updates on this and hand out more information. I'll just quickly, is that we started looking at, we heard you wanted to do it by campus. So this was our attempt to look at different types of campus. And we looked at this is focused on buildings. There's other things about other types of, you know, vacant land that we could add to this too. But we had whether it be year built, building square foot, land square foot. What's the primary use currently? What's a secondary use? If you had asked about the seismic risk or flood risk.
Thank you.
You also had asked about any recent improvements that we've done to these facilities. There was some question about, can it be surplus? Is it in, at least any plan of it to be surplus? Major needs. These are more facility needs that would be in those buildings and any other notes. So that was our first, our second run through this. If there's additional columns that you would like, a lot of this information actually is in the 2015 facility needs assessment. It gives a really good, it gives a picture, it gives a square footage, it gives a lot of history. We're going to try to summarize a lot of that in this.
So I think this is great. And if we think of some another column,
yeah.
Because like you said, this information lives even in one document in different places in that document. So this is going to be really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a good step forward.
Yeah.
And then
you think that's all, or this is as far as you got?
This is as far as we got.
Okay. You have to keep filling it in.
We'll just keep filling it in. And I think we'll add in, I mean, in a full real estate portfolio, we would have the buildings, we would have vacant land, we would have lands, you had asked about lands that we've already sold. And then as we start looking at all our lands, we actually do have a map in some different sections. We have parks. We have a lot of right-of-ways. We have lots of different things that the city owns.
And where's 54?
Looks like it might have missed it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I think we just...
There's my...
It should have been Fire Station 54, and then the old building would be old Fire Station. Yeah.
Well, it would also be good, and maybe it's covered under primary use, but some facilities are tied to what was used to pay for.
Oh, right.
And so there is that continuity,
mm-hmm.
where we can't spend something because then it's either gift of public funds or...
Yeah.
So it's, if there's some legacy
mm-hmm.
thing tied to a property, I think it would be good to have a yeah. column there so we know it's not up for consideration.
And as we found out...
And Fire State Old 52, Councilmember Quinn, the good point, we have a deed restriction on that property. And so what we're trying to do now is that, this is a living document that we will keep updated on a regular basis. And as new property comes in and new property comes out, we'll track it. We have a deed restriction on new 51 as well that we need to track.
Yep. So I want to just say thank you for this. And thank you for giving this to us nice and early. And so we know it's going to be filled out.
Yep.
So for public safety, can you also just have a split between what the old Heiser building, phase one and phase two is? I don't actually, I see a fleet in that facility. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the old one or the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that might be
right.
Okay.
And then any actual real estate properties.
Right. So some of those are getting into the monetization of surplus city properties.
Mm-hmm.
The next section, section four on page 27. In the last meeting, I think we got conversations about Traveler's Choice and Health Point, which the city has already sold and allocated those funds. George Long is in process. And then these next ones, New Porter on down, are future lease or sale or something to monetize those city properties.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last page really was looking to what are other things. Section 5, there was a question about the Intergenerational Teen Senior Center. There was a question about the Minkler shops and levy issues. There was also some questions about the Public Works Phase 2 specific questions. And if we had any missing any sections, that's what we're here for. So thank you.
You're right on.
You have Traveler's Choice and New Quarter, but you don't have the property down by 405?
Long Acres.
Is that called Long Acres?
We call it Long Acres.
I don't know all
it's the very,
okay.
It's the very bottom of page 27.
Okay.
And so what we thought about also was adding a map so you can see it also visually.
This is a very good draft start.
Thank you.
So will this come back here? Or just
We're going to keep coming back to finance and governance every 2 weeks. So that's our intent.
Thank you.
Is that everything from everybody? Any miscellaneous or anything else?
No.
Then this means adjourned.
All right.